trying to escape is futile. Who child is got to juggle it too wild? That's why we got more than two styles. To adapt in the situation, too shy. And though the road is rocky, I'm ready to try the next mile to bring sight to the blind man. It's down to the left child. We will survive in this country wilderness. Swimming through the waters of Babylon like a rebel fish. Jungleist, specialist, predator and survivalist. Spitting heaven, fire from his lips. Burn a slave driver.
Welcome, listeners, to Time for an Awakening on Black Talk Radio Network, New Media for the New Millennia. This is a history and current events program from a cultural perspective. We find this program necessary because Hosea 4:6 states, "My people are destroyed for the lack of knowledge." But we as a people can turn this around. Proverbs 4:7 states, "Wisdom is the principal thing, therefore get wisdom. With all thy getting, get an understanding." Again, welcome to the program this evening with your hosts, Brother Elliot and Brother Richard. The number to reach us to join the conversation this evening is 215-490-9832. Again, that's 215-490-9832. We're streaming live at several locations. You can go to timeforanawakening.com, which is the homepage, and catch the live stream at that location. You can go to www.blacktalkradionetwork.com/timeforanawakening. Again, that's www.blacktalkradionetwork.com/timeforanawakening. Catch the live stream there also. Or you can go to bbitumi.com/timeforanawakening. Again, that's www.abibitumi.com/timeforanawakening. Catch the live stream there. Or you can download TuneIn to any of your devices. TuneIn is a free app. Internet TuneIn search engine. Just type in Time for an Awakening. There you'll see the icon and you can stream your program live, even into your car if you had the Bluetooth capabilities or the auxiliary connection. Again, that's Time for an Awakening radio program with the live stream on the TuneIn app. Drop us an email at timeforanawakening@gmail.com. Again, that's timeforanawakening@gmail.com. Time for an Awakening also has a fan page on Facebook. In that Facebook search engine, just type in Time for an Awakening radio program. There you'll always see interesting content being posted daily by myself or Brother Richard. And do me a favor before you leave that page, just hit that like button. That's Time for an Awakening radio program with the fan page on Facebook. And Time for an Awakening media is there. Always full of the latest podcasts of the various programs on Time for an Awakening media. Interesting articles that you can read, download at later times, and share with your friends. Also check out that Time for an Awakening marketplace and our partnership with the BB Toomey. Always interesting things being put in the marketplace all the time. Various African language classes, classes on education, economics, social systems, health, and much, much more being taught by professors on both the continent and in the diaspora. So again, make that one of your favorites. Put that in your address bar. That's timeforanawakening.com. Timeforanawakening.com will take you straight to Time for an Awakening Media. It's 7:06 here on January 3rd in this new calendar year of 2021, and we're in the Sunday edition of Time for an Awakening. And this is part two of our important discussion on COVID-19, the vaccine, and Black America. And part two of this discussion, our special guest is pharmacologist and global clinical research biotechnologist, Professor Lewis Jefferson, will be with us to talk about this vaccine, to talk about COVID-19, the vaccines, and its effect on Black America, and things we can do other than these popular vaccines to protect ourselves against this virus. We'll be right back to get the program started after a brief word from our sponsors.
Mr. Moderator, our distinguished guests, brothers and sisters, our friends and our enemies. Everybody is here.
You are listening to Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasts or live programming, hit them up at timeforanawakening.com.
All Insurance Incorporated, an African-American owned and operated insurance agency in business for over 20 years, located at 231 Southeastern Road in Glenside, PA, with other offices in Germantown and West Philadelphia. Call now for commercial insurance quotes, homeowners insurance quotes, automobile insurance quotes, notary and tax services, representing over 15 major A-rated insurance companies, offering a discount on all notary services if when you call in for a free quote. Call this number, 215-885-2444. That number is 215-885-2444. 215-885-2444. All Insurance Incorporated.
Before your roof becomes unruly, call Dooley. Dooley Brothers, specializing in shingle, rubber roofs, gutters, downspouts, and vinyl sidings. Call for your free estimate today. 215-224-3882. That's 215-224-3882. Dooley Brothers Roofing, the roofing experts you can trust. That number again, 215-224-3882. 215-224-3882. Before your roof becomes unruly, call Dooley.
RG Electrical Inspections provides electrical inspections for realtors, licensed electricians, and homeowners. Licensed and insured underwriter, serving Philadelphia and surrounding area. Call today, 484-268-9837.
Overworked? Suffering with an underperforming company, headache customer, staff, or vendors? Or are you a startup who wants to get it right the first time and avoid the costly mistakes? We turned a $24,000 a year odd job handyman service into a seven-figure high-end custom home builder and commercial contractor licensed and operating in three states. This is just one transformation created for entrepreneurs like you in various industries around the country. Not what you're used to from accounting and business consulting? Well, welcome to New Business Solutions. If you're ready to go beyond advising, coaching, and training and get implemented results, call 301-244-9072. Let New Business Solutions apply the best comprehensive administrative, accounting, operations, human resources, management, sales, and marketing to help you actualize your vision for yourself and your company. From anywhere nationally, call 301-244-9072, spelled new as in numerous, on your device right now. Book your free consultation at newbusinesssolutions.com.
History is a clock that people use to tell their political and cultural time of day. It is also a compass that people use to find themselves on the map of human geography. History tells of people where they have been and what they have been, where they are and what they are. Most important, history tells a people where they still must go, what they still must be. The relationship of history to the people is the same as the relationship of a mother to her child.
From antiquity to the present, our people need to develop a new paradigm. It's time for an awakening. With your host, Brother Elliot, Sundays 7 p.m., Fridays at 8 p.m. For podcasting or live program scheduling, hit us up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com. Welcome back to Time for an Awakening. It's 7:12 here in the city of Philadelphia, and we're in the Sunday edition of Time for an Awakening. Before we get started with our program this evening, I want to welcome in my co-host, Philadelphia activist and tour guide at the African American Museum here in Philadelphia at 7th and Arch Street. Brother Richard is with us. Brother Richard.
Yes, yes, sir, Brother Elliot. How is it there?
How are you, sir?
Elliot, I'm really looking forward, as always, in our discussion, but this this is truly for me, you know, and I hope for the rest of the Time for Awakening audience, an opportunity to put us on a learning curve. You know, we've been getting so much propaganda and media, you know, saturation to, you know, about something, to do something and to wait for something. But I think what we're trying to provide here is some understanding of how we should look at something that is going to affect our, not just our lives, but future generation lives. So I'm really looking forward to continue this discussion with, you know, Professor Jefferson, just to get clarity on this, our health, this virus, and this new technology that's out here.
Listen, this is part two of this discussion topic that we've had entitled COVID-19, the Vaccine in Black America. Last week, we had Dr. Lee Muhammad on. This week, we're approaching it from a different angle. Pharmacologist, global clinical research biotechnologist, Professor Louis Jefferson, is joining us to talk about this vaccine. We're going to focus in first on the vaccine, COVID-19, the vaccine, and then we'll talk about some of the things, the prevention that we can use to help protect the communities. But let's welcome in our guest, Professor Louis Jefferson. Professor Jefferson, how are you, sir?
Oh, fine. And yourself? You know, it was just a delight to hear you open the show with my teacher, Dr. Henry Clark. So I know we're in the right direction from this point on.
Oh,
all right, sir. Oh boy! Before we get started in our discussion, Professor Jefferson, give us a little background because you were at Pfizer for a number of years.
Yes.
Because Richard asked me, were you working on vaccines there? And I thought that you were working on, I knew you that you didn't work on this COVID vaccine, but you worked on other vaccines.
Right.
Talk about some of the things you worked on at Pfizer while in your time there.
Yeah. So at my time there, I worked on anti-infectives and anti-cancer products that were fairly successful. I worked on the second coming of a compound called fluconazole. It was called voriconazole. And it is a fluoroquinolone that's been very successful in taking over or controlling infections, fungal infections with people that come from deep fungal infections in hospitalizations. Sometimes people in the hospital get these deep fungal infections and they may die from that rather than what they came into the hospital for. So you needed something to really fight that, and voriconazole was the answer. Fluconazole had been the answer for a lot of years to save a lot of lives, and I worked on that, and I worked on some breast cancer products for Pfizer.
And that takes us kind of right into dealing with this topic of these of COVID-19 and the vaccine. Before we start talking about some of the vaccines, Professor, let's talk about COVID-19 itself. We had Dr. Lee Muhammad on last week, and we talked about some of the things, and I might ask some of the same questions that I asked him, so you can, because you'll be approaching it from a different level. Talk about how it enters the body. Now, we hear about the washing of the hands, and it can come in through different mucous membranes, whether it's the eyes, the nose, the mouth. But once it enters your body, what does it do? How does it attack your cells? Does it have a home that it wants to go to? Does it just go randomly? What happens once it gets inside your system?
Yeah, that's a very good question. And to break it down in terms that people can really understand, the spike protein on the COVID vaccine, the COVID virus, is the S protein. Okay, every virus has a protein coat. And on that protein coat, it also has what we call ligands. And they're like keys that create an entry point if you have the right lock to unlock that key. In the human body, we have receptors, which are like the lock for a key. If you go into your door, you want to put the key in the keyhole. The keyhole for the virus of COVID-19 is the ACE2 receptor. That's called the angiotensin converting enzyme 2. A lot of people that are on high blood pressure medications use ACE2 inhibitors in order to cut down renin production so that there is less fluid coming into the vasculature to take down your blood pressure. So we've used ACE inhibitors before. The COVID vaccine, the COVID virus connects with the ACE receptor. The S spike connects with the ACE receptor and then is allowed to in sort of what we call an endocytic reaction. Once it unlocks that key, the cell begins to envelope the virus inside of it. It kind of folds it into it at that point. And then at that point, the RNA of the virus is able to be released into the body, and it can begin to control through replication to develop its own system to establish the virus inside your cells. And so it begins to replicate over and over and over again in your cell. Then once it replicates over and over in your cell, the cell begins to collapse because it's too many viruses inside. And then the viruses begin to escape, and they're able to go to the next keyholes of other cells to do that. Now, the lung cells have lots of angiotensin converting enzyme 2 receptors on them. They're called pneumocytes. And that's a lung cell, a specific lung cell called a pneumocyte. And COVID vaccine likes those. COVID virus likes those. And COVID also likes a receptor called CD147, which people pretty much don't talk about, but I did one lecture about it. CD147 is found a lot in the semivesicles in the testicles, the seminiferous tubules of the testicles.
Oh, okay. Now that's kind of new information for me because I'm no doctor. I just see things as happening, and I do see where a lot of people, once they get this virus and it really takes them down, they need to be on a ventilator. So I could see that it was attacking. It seems like it's attacking the lungs, and you kind of cleared that up, but I wasn't aware of attacking testicles in men. Okay.
Yes, and so that's a minor receptor in the body because it first has to get inside the body, and it wreaks havoc once it's there. But if it can make it within the blood system, it does like the CD147 receptor as well and could get into the seminiferous tubules of the testicles as well. The main focus and target for COVID, though, is the ACE2 receptor of pneumocytes, and it creates not only respiratory problems, but it causes major vascular problems, and that's the biggest problem with COVID. Not necessarily the respiratory problems, the vascular problems create the problems for the respiratory problems.
Okay.
Can I interject just,
go ahead,
just you know, on this? Because we hear, you know, out of the media and people talk about now the COVID, I guess I'm using this right, the mutation rate. Can you maybe share, like, what does that mean when they say that to us, that it is mutating or it has mutated from your vantage point?
Right. So every virus has the opportunity to mutate in order to survive. Viruses need a host to live. And they are pretty creative in creating themselves in a manner that will allow them to survive. So once they're inside certain humans, they find that they are more successful in a certain way. They'll continue to replicate that sequence of RNA in order for them to survive. And they begin to change the sequence in order to survive. So lately what you hear, there's a more virulent strand that's coming out in Europe. They're trying to blame a little bit of it on Azania, what we call South Africa. But most of it is coming out of Europe, and it is replicating. It's starting to mutate in a sense that allows it to spread but it's not making it more deadly at this point. And viruses can take two turns. It can mutate in a way that makes it less virulent, and it can mutate in a way that makes it more successful. And in this case, it's becoming more successful.
Professor Jefferson, the three vaccines, the one by Pfizer, the one by Moderna, and the one I think that's going to be coming out by AstraZeneca. Talk about, I said viruses, the vaccines.
I've been doing that too.
Talk about these three vaccines. They're being promoted, especially among our community, to really encourage African Americans to be inoculated with these vaccines. And I see from some of your talks in reference to these vaccines, they're very problematic. And you're talking about it as an expert that have worked in this field and knows the study. Talk about these three vaccines and how you see them as problematic for our people to be dealing with.
Yes, yeah, that, I think that's a very critical question, and thank you for asking it. I find them to be problematic, and I first want to start off by saying that throughout history in making vaccines, and our people have not been short in preventing viruses in, throughout history, as we opened up with Brother Dr. Clark, and there's been traditional ways of developing vaccines by exposing human populations to non-virulent strands of a virus or taking a protein part from a virus, exposing your body to it in order to mount an immune response so that your body is prepared for the virus when it hits and your body is prepared to lock that door. Your body will lock the key. It'll put a cover on the key before it's able to even open up the ACE2 receptor. And those vaccines take a little bit longer to develop. The vaccines that have been developed so far are messenger RNA vaccines. There's two of them, one from Pfizer and one from Moderna. They are messenger RNA vaccines. And they have never been inoculated into human existence. That's for one. Now, I'm not going to shoot them down totally for some future generation, but at this point, there is very little safety on them. And the reason why they're problematic is that messenger RNA is part of a central dogma. It's like the if you have a cookbook, which is DNA, and you have the recipes in the cookbook, the messenger RNA would be the recipes. And every one of us has DNA in our body that makes the cookbook to make us who we are. It makes our eye cells, our kidney cells, our lung cells. And once our bodies program our DNA to make certain proteins, it sends that message to messenger RNA. And that messenger RNA has to be read by what we call a ribosome. A ribosome is like a typewriter. So if you have the cookbook that you want to write the recipe in and you want somebody to type it out, the ribosome types it out. But the ribosome can go wrong. And if the ribosome goes wrong, when it types something out, the RNAs form proteins, and the proteins make certain things that we need in our bodies. But if it types up something wrong, it would make a protein that is foreign to our body, something that our body would resist, could mount a very hard immune response to. It can create connective tissue disorders. It can create mutations and cancer or fibroids. It's very problematic, and that's why we find messenger RNA vaccines very problematic. Now, the other part of the messenger RNA vaccines that they're using, in order to get it into the cell, so they're going to inject it into your body, you can't just inject messenger RNA into the body because your body will fight it off immediately, and it will be removed through your liver and through your immune responses to it. But they are wrapping it in what we call lipid nanoparticles, and these are synthetic lipids. Like our own cells have lipid layers around them called plasma membrane. All of our cells are coated with plasma membrane. The scientists have mimicked the plasma membrane with what they call lipid nanoparticles, which are also foreign to the body, and they have to get into the cell. So those lipid nanoparticles will also form some odd sort of interactions with our plasma membranes. So I want to stop there and then let you ask any more questions, because I don't want to overwhelm with talking, but I can go on if you'd like. I'm going to give you a break.
Can I raise a clarifying question? And it goes to maybe my assumptions or belief or my limited information. You said it never been inoculated in human. Did you say human history? I mean, as far as the messenger RNA.
Messenger RNA vaccines.
Vaccines.
There are some cancer drugs that are being developed that are utilizing messenger RNA. There are some, but it's very, very recent. But they've never used messenger RNA for vaccines.
And that this lipid nanoparticle. The question I want to raise, and I think I was asking Dr. Aline before, was: could we consider this vaccine, this messenger RNA, a new technology, because it is, and I guess I'm putting my spin to it for clarity, because it is created to do this particular type of job in relationship to the virus? Can we call it a new technology in that sense?
It is indeed a new technology, and we're not against new technology. We want to advance as a civilization, but in this case, the new technology has not been tried and tested, and all of the science has not been considered. I would challenge Dr. Fauci, I would challenge Dr. Kismetha Corbett, I would challenge the NIH to come on this show or any show and tell me whether a messenger RNA, once it gets into the cell and connects with the ribosome, could it not have foreign proteins be read by the ribosome? I want them to tell me that. I want that to be a national question.
And in that, because I've heard this discussion, it came up, and especially with the messenger RNA, and you'll go, you know, Elliot asked about all three of these companies. So it's the other company that is dealing with the DNA vaccine.
Yeah, we got to go into that one too.
Messenger RNA vaccine. But I want to be clear in relationship to what you just said, and I'm fuzzy, very fuzzy, like almost blind, right?
Yes.
This messenger RNA, though it goes into the cell, it does not go into the nucleus of the DNA.
That's excellent. Yeah, you got a great understanding. And it, obviously, that's a great scientific background. You paid attention somewhere in science. but that is correct. That is what makes the Moderna or Pfizer vaccine, although we find them problematic, we don't find them as problematic as what we're going to talk about with the AstraZeneca vaccine. But because the messenger RNA, can get into the nucleus, but it's not readily going to happen. But it can. And that's not our biggest gripe. The biggest gripe that we have is that it has to be read by a ribosome, and ribosomes can misread. And once you misread, then it's a foreign protein. And let me break that down a little bit too. Every RNA, so RNA has four different types of nucleotides. It's like an alphabet, the alphabet of messenger RNA. And that alphabet is translated to proteins. So a protein is one amino acid is equal to three nucleotides from a messenger RNA. And based on the order of those nucleotides determines what type of amino acid it makes. If just one of those nucleotides is typed wrong, then you get a different amino acid. And that different amino acid will make a totally different protein in our body.
And you brought back, because at first I was thinking that the messenger RNA goes to the cell. Well, let me ask this, and it's I had a social question, and I turned back. For you to go into the other one, based off of what we just exchanged and looking at the Black community in general, especially in North America, should we, from your vantage point, be more scientifically literate to understand what we're being told, and how those of us who just have a 12th grade education or less, what is it from your vantage point that we should hear to be conscientious of in our learning curve as this is being more and more projected to us, if that makes sense?
Yes. Yep. Yes. I go back to Brother Dr. Henry Clark, in that we have a responsibility as an African people to, in whatever organization we have or whatever knowledge that we have, to utilize that as an instrument of our liberation, of an instrument of our development. And it's up to people like me to give this to our community. Like, the Creator and our ancestors have graced me with the knowledge. And we all have our knowledge in other parts. Like, you two have this great platform to be able to give the message, and you're giving it to the people in that way. And we have a responsibility to do that. Our scientists must be honest with our people and break it down and be open to our people to say, okay, ask me questions. I don't care how stupid you think the question may be. Let's get an understanding of this, and let's do it. And it's for the other scientists like Kismetha Corbett, who is on nationwide television promoting this mRNA vaccine. Let her and I come on and let's talk with each other and have dialogue and be able to ask these questions. And I think that's important for our people. And I think hopefully that answers your question.
Yes, yes. So Elliot, I know, and I wanted to follow up on that. What is that? What's that around the RNA vaccine? What is the name of that company again?
AstraZeneca.
Yeah.
Yeah. So yes, AstraZeneca has the DNA vaccine.
Excuse me.
So, Brother Elliot, did you want to ask a question about
that? Yeah, Professor Jefferson, before you go to talk about AstraZeneca's vaccine, mm-hmm. that's different than the Moderna and the Pfizer. Let me go back. You mentioned about the material that encompasses our cells naturally. Mm-hmm. Say that again, that material that you...
It's the plasma membrane.
Okay.
Cell membrane.
You said that to duplicate or to emulate this plasma membrane, that the vaccine, when it's injected into our body, is not rebuffed right away. They emulate this plasma membrane. Am I right? Did I kind of get that right?
You are correct, yes.
So all of these things that you're talking about, are they synthetic
yep,
substances, or are they? Tell our listening audience what these are. Are all of them synthetic substances? Is any of it animal or parts of animal? What is this that they're injecting into us to have this enter into our bloodstream?
Right. So in the case of the messenger RNA vaccines, they're not animal products, and we'll get into the one for AstraZeneca, which is an animal product. But for the messenger RNA vaccines and the new technology of messenger RNA vaccines, they're utilizing lipid nanoparticles. And lipid nanoparticles are emulating our plasma membrane. So plasma membranes are like fats. They keep our organelles of our cells together, our nucleus, our RNA, our endoplasmic reticulum, our Golgi bodies, all of those things that you heard of in biology, they remain intact inside our cell in order to make our proteins. And if they are exposed, they couldn't do anything. They couldn't help make our proteins. So they have to be covered by these lipid bilayers, and lipids meaning fats, and they're lipid phosphobilayers. So it's a phosphate in there, and there's also fats that create this lipid bilayer that coats our cells. Now, it's been emulated with lipid nanoparticles to be as close as it can to what our plasma membranes are in order to get it in the cell. There's no way that they would be able to get this messenger RNA into the cell unless they coated it with like this lipid nanoparticle or coated with some sort of virus in order to get it in.
And all of these things that they're coating it with are synthetic substances.
It's a synthetic substance, a lipid nanoparticle.
Good. Okay.
I urge people to look that up on Google or whatever. It's a lipid nanoparticle.
Okay. Now, because as you're speaking, you're letting us know that a lot of these foreign substances or synthetic substances are dangerous to the body.
Yes, within itself, because the body goes through what we call homeostasis. The body is balanced on its own, you know, and any foreign substance injected into the body creates an imbalance. And everybody knows, even if you look at the safety data on Moderna and Pfizer vaccine, you can see that there have been fatigue, fever, and chills on the injections, anaphylaxis. So the body is rejecting it. And we know that. Like even if we wanted it to be safe, we know that the body is going to mount an immune response to it. But it shouldn't amount, you shouldn't mount an immune response based on foreign proteins, because you have a lot of autoimmune reactivity. And down the line, if you have foreign proteins that can be established through a misread in ribosomes, then you have even more autoimmune reaction possibilities or mutations or cancer and that sort of thing.
Those are the two that's now the one that's coming, the AstraZeneca. Talk about that, because that's different than these other two that you already stated is dangerous to our body. But talk about this one that's coming down the pipeline by AstraZeneca. That's the DNA vaccine.
Yes. So the DNA vaccine. And again, there are like about 4 to 5 different types of ways you can make a vaccine. And in this case, they are utilizing a viral vector. And a viral vector, what that means is that they need a carrier. They need a live carrier that can get something into the cell. And the live carrier is, in this case, the vector, is the chimpanzee adenovirus. I'm going to say that again. It's the chimpanzee. I said, yep, chimpanzee adenovirus. Okay, so everybody gets the adenovirus. You've had the adenovirus. I've had the adenovirus. Adenovirus is really not very unsafe. Like, you get the adenovirus, it's like a common cold.
Okay.
And so, you know, if you coat it with a human adenovirus, the worst that you can have, the worst that can happen to you is that you would catch the cold. But most of the time, when they use it as a coat, they take out the infectious gene part of it, and then you just have the coat, and that's safe. And some companies are developing a vaccine like that. I wouldn't have any problem taking that. But the AstraZeneca vaccine, there's two reasons why it's a problem. That the chimpanzee adenovirus can create what we call a zoonotic effect. Like, so normally viruses from animals don't translate very well to humans, and humans don't translate that readily to animals, not that often, but it happens. And it happens based on exposure. And if you're exposed to dogs and cats a lot, you start to catch some of their viruses, and vice versa. And so here we go. If you're developing a vaccine using the chimpanzee adenovirus, and as Brother Richard, is his name?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
As Brother Richard mentioned about mutations, every year the COVID virus is going to mutate, and you're going to have to make another vaccine. And so if every time you utilize a vaccine, you use a chimpanzee adenovirus, eventually humans are going to manufacture that as an infectious virus. It's going to change at that point. And it's going to be foreign, and it's going to eventually become a problem for us. The other issue is that with the AstraZeneca DNA that they're placed into the chimpanzee adenovirus is a synthetic DNA. And that synthetic DNA is mimicking the structure of the S spike protein of the coronavirus. Okay, that's an okay idea. But it's the problem is that it's DNA, and you're injecting that into the system, and and with DNA, the DNA can get into the nucleus. The messenger RNA couldn't get into the nucleus. Mm-hmm. But if you have the adenovirus there, and you have DNA, the DNA gets into the nucleus. Now I want Kismetha, I want Dr. Fauci, I want every one of them to talk to me on this show or anybody else's show and tell the community, tell the world whether DNA can begin to interfere with our own DNA.
So wait a minute.
I'll let you ask a question.
I want the listening audience to understand what you're saying. In this vaccine, it's chimpanzee DNA that's injected into the nucleus of the cells of humans. What could be some possible effects of this, Professor? I mean, if you know, what could be the possible outcomes of this? Just cursory. You don't have to go deep into it. Just tell our listening audience the possible effects of this.
Yeah. First, let me clarify that they're not injecting they're not injecting chimpanzee DNA into the nucleus. They're coding the synthetic DNA in a chimpanzee adenovirus.
Okay.
So in a sense, Brother Elliot, you are correct in that the chimpanzee adenovirus is partially chimpanzee DNA. Yeah, it is. So, or at least it's the chimpanzee adenovirus. It's the virus. It's the DNA of that virus. It's not necessarily a chimpanzee DNA.
Okay.
It's the DNA of the virus that chimpanzees catch. Is that? But that's a problem. And then they're injecting the synthetic DNA that's mimicking the spike protein, the S spike protein of the coronavirus inside of that chimpanzee virus. And then they inject that. So yes, that chimpanzee virus is able to get inside the cell, able to connect with the nucleus and allow for that DNA to enter the nucleus. Mm-hmm.
Professor, the timeline of usual vaccines might take years. I assume you can help us with that.
Yes.
The rushing of this vaccine and skipping steps dealing with the timelines of human trials and watching how whatever vaccine, how it reacts in humans over a period of time. What is the danger of these steps being skipped and basically injecting populations and just watching what it does in populations? Talk about the danger of this, because it's too many of our, and I'm talking just the black public now, because this program kind of focuses in on us. It's too many of our elected officials, our ministers, doctors being instructed to let the rank and file people know to take this vaccine. Just talk about the dangers of this with these steps being skipped and it's just going right into people's arms.
Yes. Yeah. The dangers are that foreign proteins can develop there can be, and those foreign proteins can create havoc on our immune system and other organs. If you have foreign proteins in your kidneys, foreign proteins in your lungs, you're going to mount an immune response against those, and you have these inflammatory effects that can create illnesses and organ dysfunction. Even so far, like even we've seen 4 to 5 cases of Bell's palsy and with the Pfizer vaccine that you haven't seen within the placebo. And Bell's palsy is where the 7th cranial nerve, which innervates our facial muscles, it becomes infected or inflamed, and you're unable to smile, you're unable to frown, you're unable to squeeze your eyes tight through not being able to use your facial muscles. So it has already caused that. It has caused like 2, and these are small cases so far, but there's been 4 to 5 cases of that, and then there's transverse myelitis that has happened. Transverse myelitis is where you have inflammation of your central nervous system. That's the spinal cord and the brain stem in the brain. In this case, the transverse myelitis inflames the spinal cord, where it creates weakness in your muscles or even paralysis. There have been 2 cases of those. They already have, even on their warning, they say that pregnant women shouldn't take these. If you were lactating, you shouldn't take these. If you even plan on getting pregnant, you shouldn't take these vaccines. So they know that it could have, well, they don't know the effect, but they know it could interfere with DNA and mRNA of developing fetus and the developing human gestation. So they know that, and those are very dangerous. I also say that it's very odd that they're pushing it so fast. I think it's more political reasons to say that we want to open up the economy because it's a capitalist society, and that the economy is more important than people. And we say that because there are other ways to develop vaccines that are safer, that are tried and true, that they can do, and they may be coming out very shortly anyway. I advise people to social distance, wash their hands, take preventative measures. I'll get into that some more as we talk, but I think those should be the preventative measures that we can take until we are offered a vaccine that is more human friendly. And the last point on that is that China and the former Soviet Union, Russia, have vaccines that they're offering to their population that are utilizing the old technique. And how were they able to get that out there so fast to their population? And in this case, the Sinopharm vaccine and the Sinopharm 1 and Sinopharm 2 vaccine of China has equal efficacy than the Moderna and Pfizer compound. So why are we pushing this? And you can say it's because of money. The Pfizer and Moderna want to make this money really fast. They also want to develop messenger in our technology just in case they have weaponized vaccines, and they know that's coming because they've been weaponizing viruses to destroy populations of people. And so they want to know, they want to be able to do that fast and see if they can do it fast just in case something like that happened. Now, this is just my opinion of why they would try and do it so fast. But you can see where I'm going with that.
Well, you know, Richard, I want you to jump in here because we were talking about this off the air and you mentioned something in reference to that.
I want to definitely keep it in context. Like, let me say, I'm not a conspiratorialist, right?
Me either.
And I'm not, and I don't do deep dive research. But it goes to that point of being scientifically literate. And then when you get questions and we have this technology to run down information.
Yes.
So I want to just pose these articles, you know, paragraphs, if people can bear with me, to show that somewhat, this is something that's not necessarily new, and it has a thing. DAPRA, right? The what's that? The Defense Advanced Research Agency, right? Went into a contract with Pfizer, and that's why I was raising the question with Pfizer in 2012 with the AdaptProtect program. DAPRA began investing in the development of gene-encoded vaccines, a new category of preventive measures based on DNA or RNA.
Mm-hmm.
And this approach, mm-hmm. genes that encoded immune-stimulating antigens, such as the spike protein, on the surface of viruses like the one SARS-CoV-2 that mm-hmm. causes COVID-19 are delivered directly to a recipient body. So that's mm-hmm. one part. You know, now this is, I'm looking at the date, 2012.
Yeah, right? 2012, yeah. Right.
A primary objective of DEPRA Biological Technology Office is to better ensure the health and therefore the force readiness of the country's military service community. Now, mm-hmm. this comes out of the dealing with MARS, which mm-hmm. is the Middle East president. One more paragraph to show that because this, what they're telling, what they call this here, what they call in this effort, Operation
Warp Speed.
Right. This is a military aspect in the civilian population. Now, this article is 2013, news of the project emerged after the Defense Advanced Research Project Agency, DARPA, the research arm of the Pentagon, awarded Pfizer a 3-year, $7.7 million contract. Details of the research are scarce, but what DEPRA has revealed implies it wants to cut response time to pandemics or bioterrorism threats by eliminating several of the steps currently needed to confer mm-hmm. immunity. And if I'm not mistaken,
bam. Wow.
What you're saying, how they, one, they've been working on it, and two, the moving from 6 months from in 6 months to come out. And I heard in one of the presentations, you said, so we're really still in phase 3 trials. Is that correct?
Yes, exactly. It's not... This is not even an approved therapy. It's just uncanny how this happened. There's not even, there were no peer review articles on this vaccine. You're giving it to the public. You got the vice president of the United States and the president encouraging you to do it. They're trying to get LeBron James to do it just to encourage black people to take it, to experiment on us. Yet you have no peer review information to offer the public on this vaccine. And you're saying, trust the science. And my question is, what science? And you don't even have to be a conspiracy theorist to say that. What science?
Just and that's why I thought that it's important for us to raise how they're important for us to be at least scientifically literate. So that
thank you for reading that, because I hadn't even read that, and it validates what I was saying.
Now, something you also offered. At this point right now, even though we hear about these three, and it's a thing about that, if I'm not mistaken, is there more than 700 vaccines that are in trial right now in relation to dealing with the COVID?
I know of the number that I've heard is 259 to 300 that are underway. There are, and this was about 3 weeks ago, there were 11 in phase 3. Now, that's pretty far along. In phase 3, so I would imagine there were 6 that are coming up for emergency release. So while they're trying to push these, you can see that Pfizer, Moderna is paying the media, say get ours first. Let's make sure that the American population are getting ours first. You know, but there is really no rush. I say no rush in the sense that the benefits may not outweigh the risk. And if you take preventative measures, your risk, especially with the AstraZeneca vaccine, was only 70%. They say 90% for some reason. And with that one, you got 70%, you have less than, how should I say it? You have greater or less than 70% risk if you wash your hands, stay socially distanced, take your vitamin D. Why do that for 70%?
I apologize, Elliot, but you know how I get on this roll, because you also raised that, what's it, and I don't know why I can't, AstraZeneca,
yeah,
their trial is in Brazil.
Let me say something about that too. the AstraZeneca trial in Brazil, like when they were testing it, was this Moderna or AstraZeneca, where like they tested in Brazil like 9,000 people. They tested 9,000 people in general. So, and they gave in clinical research, you want to give the lowest dose possible just in case there's a problem. All right. So in the UK, they gave only half the dose to the people in the UK. That's majority European. In Brazil, they gave the full dose on the first dose, and it was 6,000 people in Brazil, predominantly African in Brazil. And they gave the full dose. And then they said it was a mistake.
Mm.
You don't make that sort of mistake in pharmaceutical companies. Heads roll. People get fired. It's like, and the American public is accepting that as if it was a real mistake.
Now, wait a minute, Professor. Hold it.
Because they
don't even discuss this. The average black public has no clue about what you just stated. Now,
yes.
You said that. Now this is the AstraZeneca vaccine.
Yes, that's the AstraZeneca vaccine. Yes.
They did trials in both the UK and went to Brazil. Now Brazil has the largest diaspora population outside the continent.
Yes.
And they gave half doses to the Europeans in the UK and full doses in Brazil.
Yes.
And watched and just sat back and watched to see what would happen.
Yeah, to see what would happen first. And then once it was time for the second dose, they gave the UK the full dose, and then they gave Brazil the full dose. And then once they figure out, okay, well, the Brazilians haven't died yet, we'll continue on with the study. We'll keep on. We'll do it like this. We'll give half the dose and then the full dose. But they experimented first, and they did it in a sneaky way. Like, I'm like, in all my years of the pharmaceutical industry, and it's been at this point going on 25. I could imagine a mistake like that. That just doesn't happen. It's not a mistake.
Okay. Wow.
And the thing is not to be a sign, and I know we want to get to what you're saying, that we need to, as a population, we need, for several reasons, need to be intermediate while we're working for a possible safe vaccine that we could engage with a healthy precautionary note or a healthy self-conscious. That they're telling us now that the vaccines that will be, whether any one of them, but primarily the two, Moderna and Pfizer, but even with AstraZeneca, the states gets to choose which vaccine. So you can't go to the doctor and say, I want Moderna, or I want this. You have to get the vaccine that they have negotiated with in order to take.
Yes. May I please say something about Pfizer's data, though?
Go ahead.
Like, and this is what I would tell anybody. If anybody is so caught up into propaganda that they think that they need to take these vaccines, the three vaccines that are coming out right now, I would say if you really think you want to take it, make sure it's Moderna. I wouldn't take any of them. I think they're a risk. And the reason why I say that is because the data with Pfizer is so skewed. So, and this is the reason why. Okay, so you know that they had 44,000 people that they tested with this vaccine. They had them come in, they had the people come in, and they check whether the person had COVID virus or not, whether they had it or not. So we know that the COVID test is inaccurate, for one. We also know that people can be asymptomatic and get on a trial and they've already mounted an immune response, even if they did get the vaccine. And they've only already mounted an immune response because they've already had it. So if you've already had it, and then you give a person a dose, you see, and then they put them into the normal population, say, do what you do. And then they say, in 28 days, let's come back, and we're going to give you another dose. And then you do what you do. And the end point for them, the how they measured whether it was working or not, was whether the people had symptoms and came back and said they had COVID or not. They didn't test people to see whether they had COVID or not. They said, okay, we'll see. Like, out of this 94 people that came back and said that they had COVID, they said out of the 44,000 people that they had tested, 94 people came back that had COVID, and then I think they had like maybe 9 that didn't have COVID. And they said this is 94.9% effective. They never, so the people that may have been asymptomatic even after the vaccine, that may have contracted COVID, may have had COVID and never reported it because you never tested whether they had it or not. With Moderna, they did at least do nasal swabs after they took both doses. With Pfizer, it was random. If you felt like you had COVID, come back and see us. If you don't feel like you have COVID, stay gone. So, and we know that 40% of all population that catch COVID are asymptomatic. So how can you say that that is 94% effective? And I want Kismet Corbett, I want Dr. Fauci, I want Kamala Harris, I want all of them to answer that question.
Wow.
Go
ahead, Richard. Go ahead. Finish it up.
I was just going to, because of what you're saying, and I'm stuck on this, our literacy at this point, because this is, if I understood you right, whether because of mutation, whether because of just the way the virus will work, there's going to be updates to this, and we should become informed. So the question I had, I guess the final question for this section is, for us, again, what should we be looking at that you feel confident for people to be able to follow, to be informed, if that's a fair question?
Yeah, very, very fair. I look at this website called RAPS. That's the acronym for it. It's Regulatory Affairs Professionals Society.org. And it tells you about all the vaccines that are being that are under development, what they're doing with them, how they're doing with the data, a little bit of data that you do have on them. They do provide that. You can also go on clinicaltrials.gov if you want to look at the cursory, just the shell of how the studies were set up. You can find those on clinicaltrials.gov. That's C as in Charlie, L as in Libra, I as in Ike, N as in Nancy, and then T as in Tom, R as in Rita, I as in Ike, A as in Alphabet, L as in Larry, S is in sam.gov. And that gives you all of the studies. I mean, there's enough real science and real information to question these vaccines. We don't even need conspiracy theories.
Right. That's what I'm, because there's some segments of the community that when you, even in your common sense, want to question it, then they box you into this conspiratorial thing. And if we don't have just cursory information, then we'll go on. And I think it's important, because when we're communicating with our children, this technology is going to evolve. It's not just now this, but it's going to evolve. So I don't want to go no further on that, but that's why I think that we need to create as a communication our own way of critically thinking, of communicating. And I appreciate you saying where the professional scientific community can be able to communicate with us in these kind of venues and be able to, like, really not belittle us, but really communicate with us of what really is going on in that realm based off of the technical background.
Yes.
We're in conversation with pharmacologist, global clinical research, biotechnologist, Professor Lewis Jefferson This is part two of our discussion dealing with COVID-19, the vaccine, and Black America. You can get involved in the conversation by dialing 215-490-9832. That's 215-490-9832. Professor Jefferson, before we move into some of the things dealing with prevention, let me say this last thing on the vaccines, because I want you to kind of wrap it up for us. These three that's out there, you're not in favor of our people taking these vaccines, but you are in favor of some of the more protein-based vaccines that will be coming down later on. Help the listening audience with that.
Yes. Historically, like in indigenous populations, historically, they've known even before modern technology like that we have it, that if you expose the human body to some of the blood of someone with an infection, you could mount an immune response. That has been established well beyond our time. And part of what is being done with the protein-based vaccines is just that. And even some of the viral vector vaccines, where you're taking a coating of the virus itself that's non-infectious and exposing our immune system to it so that we can mount our own immune response to it. And those are safer. Like if you look at, you take the protein coats of the virus itself and do a protein base, you can build a safe vaccine that creates immunity. I don't know the efficacy of any of those yet, but I know it's possible because it's being done. It's done with the flu vaccine. People take that all the time. We have the polio vaccine. We are not anti-vax. We appreciate the fact that we don't have polio due to the fact that we took a vaccine for it, that we took the measles vaccine. We took rubella. So we're not against vaccines, but these two are not as safe as the protein-based, and we should wait for those. And I don't think that they're too far down the line. I also know that in China, they're developed. They have over a billion Chinese people that have a 94% of efficacy rate on a viral vector-based, but it's safer. And another protein-based, that's safer. So we know we could do it. We just didn't.
Now, the protein, talk about the interferon that the Cubans doctors use. I understand in one of your talks, you talked about how that's produced naturally in the body. Talk about that.
Yes. Interferons are, and it's just like what the name says, interferons, what we call a cytokine, which is a signal protein. And it signals your cells. So when a cell engulfs a virus and the internal cell sends a signal out, and it's called interferon. And that interferon tells your other cell, oh, hey, it's a virus in that cell. Block it, inhibit the protein synthesis of it, inactivate its RNA. And the COVID-19 is an RNA virus. So it makes sense to use interferon because your body produces it. And so if you feel like you have COVID and you want to induce the ability to gain protection after you have it, interferon seems like a likely choice. And we've seen in some of the data that I've seen that interferon has reduced levels of intensive care and reduced hospital stay and the intensity of the virus itself. It's not a vaccine, but it is a viable treatment. Okay. There should be more studies on it, but the Cubans are using it. And the preliminary data on it from what they've been using looks good. Interferon, like any other drug, has side effects. But in the case, the benefits outweigh the risk if you're using it temporarily for COVID.
Okay. We're going to take a brief break. Well, let me go to the call. I've been waiting before we take a break. Let's go to 267. 267.
Good evening, Ellie, Richard, and I want to say good evening to your guests. I'm very grateful that you're bringing some very important information to the table. I'm not a scientist, don't even pretend to be, but I know one thing. I see propaganda when it's being pushed down our throats, and I'm getting sick and tired of when I cut on this thing we call a boob tube, seeing a bunch of black people being stuck with needles every time I cut on.
Yes.
You know what I mean? So I understand propaganda when it's when it's being forced on me. Now, you know, one thing, and you and Richard brought this up a little earlier, you talked about it being a trial. And one thing I do know about trials, there are no verdicts yet, or it wouldn't be a trial. So,
So,
it's a lot of things that are common sense here that a lot of our people, and I hear it on our local Black Talk radio station. I hear it from other media platforms. They're like parrots. And see, that's the thing that I'm starting to get sick of with our so-called black owned media. They're just repeating what the propagandists say. They just repeat it to us, and we're supposed to go along with it. But what I wanted, my question to you, sir, and I got two. One is, I was vitamin D deficient about 3 years ago. My doctor told me, he said, look, just go. Yeah, I'm not going to tell you the name of the company, but he told me to go to this company, get my D3 vitamins over the counter. It's no problem, and just take it on a day. I'm no longer vitamin D deficient. Thing I've been reading is most of the people that suffer with this disease, and I wonder why the so-called news media and these other black media outlets aren't pushing this about why 80-something percent of the people that suffer with this virus are vitamin D deficient.
Yeah, tell it, brother. Yes. Yeah.
You know what I mean? I mean, it'll sneak out, but why is this? And we know why. But, you know, most of our people just come like a parrot. They just repeat what's told to them, and then they're so-called scientists. Like I said, when I first came on here, I said that I am not a scientist. I am not a doctor, but I do take suggestions from medical professionals such as yourself, such as Dr. Aline from last week. You know, I do take suggestions from medical professionals that I trust. This salty character on TV, he looks untrustworthy.
Yeah,
I don't trust him. You can look at the man and see what he is.
Right.
Yeah. So what I wanted to also ask you, now I wanted to ask you about the D3, but then I went to, I go to a chiropractor. And I remember the chiropractor, you know, we were talking about this COVID thing when it first came out. And I told him, I said, well, you know, there was a medical doctor that told me years ago, and maybe you can add on to this, about just a common cold, which is a virus. He said, when you start getting the onset of this, he said, what you need to do, he said, you need to get some beta carotene, 25 IUs, international units, and then you need to get some garlic. You take those before this thing really set in, and it does something to your immune system. And automatically my chiropractor said, I know why he said that. And he started talking about the RNA and the DNA. And I, you know, like I said, I barely got out of high school. I didn't want to hear all that, but he understood the reason that these vitamins and these supplements are very important to building up your immune system more than some crazy vaccine that's still going through the trial basis. So could you elaborate on that a little bit? You know, I'm not going to take up too much time because I know for a fact there's a lot of people that want to talk to you because that thing had me all paranoid last week, but I don't even take a flu vaccine and never had the flu. So
right, you know, I don't either, so, brother.
Anybody the same hue as me coming to me telling, and matter of fact, want to bully him in me seeing things their way, and they don't even have an MD behind their name. Something's wrong with that individual. So I'm just calling to vent a little bit, but if you can answer those questions about D3 and how that, you know, how that helps us, and also the beta carotene, which is 25 international units, and the garlic, I would appreciate that, sir, because I could tell that you you know what you're talking about.
Yes, yeah, absolutely, brother. Thank you for those comments.
Thanks for your call, brother.
Yeah, so with D3, I can answer for B-complex vitamins. I wouldn't be able to speak as heavily on that, but I'm a strong proponent of D3 because of what D3 is. And D3, I did a whole presentation on it. D3 is not only a vitamin. It is a hormone. And that D3, unlike most vitamins, it is able to get into the nucleus. So it's able to, it has what you call a vitamin D3 receptor complex on the nucleus. And the D3, once it is established through sunlight and then through supplementation, meaning you eat it in your food or you have D3, you take D3 supplements, is able to go to the liver where the liver turns it into 25 hydroxy D3, and then it goes to the kidney where the kidney gives it its useful form. And once it has the useful form, that vitamin D is able to get into the nucleus and control transcription factors. So like if you have a virus that comes up or a bacteria that comes up or even cancer, it can trigger the transcription factors to develop more of what you need. And that more could be what we talked about, interferon. It could be more B cells. It could be more T cells. So we also know that D3 also increases the level of what we call human cathelicidin. That's spelled C as in Charlie, A as in alphabet, T as in Tom, H as in Henry, E as in Edward, L as in Lima, I as in Ike, C I-D-I-N, cathelicidin, like Kathy. It is a antimicrobial peptide that can kill viruses on the spot inside of your body. And oftentimes, if you're getting your vitamin D3 through sunlight, it can literally linger in your upper respiratory and trap the virus before it's able to get deeper into the lungs. So D3 is very, very important. It's also very important to get your D3 as much as you can through sunlight. But, of course, we live in the northern hemisphere, which is above the 35th parallel. And when you look at the map of the United States, any states above like Tennessee, any states above North Carolina, any states above California, like if you take a line through the United States, we don't get enough sunlight in those regions in the winter time. So it's important for us to take vitamin D3 supplements. And the supplements that you take, typically they're, you take 2000 IU. The supplements come in about the level of 2000 IU. You'll see that on the bottle. And it's important to probably take about maybe 4000 IU. That would be two per day. And you want for your D3 levels to remain, and if you go to your doctors, I hope that everybody is listening, I'll say what you want your D3 levels to be. So if everybody's listening, write this down. You want your doctors to let you know whether your D3 is around 50 to 70 nanograms per milliliter. That's N as in Nancy, G as in George, / M as in Mary, Ella's, and Larry. That's nanograms per milliliter. 51 to 70 nanograms per milliliter. If you have heart disease, cancer, or kidney problems, you want it to be even higher. Or if you're obese, because obesity takes down your ability to utilize your vitamin D. So it's good to lose weight. If you're overweight, that's one reason why obesity is a risk factor of COVID also, that you don't even utilize your vitamin D effectively if you're overweight, and you would need more supplementation, and you want it to be around 71 to 100 nanograms per milliliter. And, of course, if you have sarcoidosis, I like to tell people that you really want to watch taking supplementation. You want to talk to your doctor about it, because D3 can have some deleterious effects on you if you are taking it and you're not watching it. So, I hope that's helpful information. For us as a darker skinned people, we typically have less vitamin D3 in our system, and we don't utilize it as effectively because the sunlight has to hit our skin, the ultraviolet rays, and thanks to the Creator and our ancestors, that our skin protects us from ultraviolet rays. And we need more sunlight than our lighter skin humanity that can take it in and more. And so we need either more sunlight or more supplementation. It's very important for us to watch that. The last thing I want to say is about that is high fructose corn syrup. I want to say it again. High fructose corn syrup. It's in our syrup. It's in our fruit and sugary drinks. It's in our sodas. It's in a lot of our food, our cookies, a lot of what we eat. We have to rid ourselves of it because it has what you call 24-hydroxylase that transforms our 1,25-hydroxy-D3 back into a substance that our body cannot use, that doesn't make it effective for us. So if we have high fructose corn syrup in our diet, we're killing ourselves and we're killing our immune system and ability to allow D3 to be preventative as it can. And that's what I like to say.
Wow. Listen, we're going to take a brief break. And when we come back, we'll take more calls. You can we got some calls on the line. Hold till after the break. You can join the conversation by dialing 215-490-9832. Again, that's 215-490-9832. We're in conversation with pharmacologist, global clinical research, biotechnologist, Professor Lewis Jefferson. And this is a continuation, part two of the discussion, COVID-19, the vaccine, and Black America. Again, join the conversation by dialing 215-490-9832. Time for an awakening. We'll be right back.
Listening to Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasts or live programming, hit them up at timeforanawakening.com.
All Insurance Incorporated, an African American owned and operated insurance agency in business for over 20 years, located at 231 Southeastern Road in Glenside, PA, with other offices in Germantown and West Philadelphia. Call now for commercial insurance quotes, homeowners insurance quotes, automobile insurance quotes, notary and tax services, representing over 15 major A-rated insurance companies, offering a discount on all notary services when you call in for a free quote. Call this number, 215-885-2444. That number is 215-885-2444. 215-885-2444. All Insurance Incorporated.
RG Electrical Inspections provides electrical inspections for realtors, licensed electricians, and homeowners. Licensed and insured underwriter, serving Philadelphia and surrounding area. Call today, 484-268-9837.
Before your roof becomes unruly, call Dooley. Dooley Brothers, specializing in shingle, rubber roofs, gutters, downspouts, and vinyl sidings. Call for your free estimate today. 215-224-3882. That's 215-224-3882. Dooley Brothers Roofing, the roofing experts you can trust. That number again, 215-224-3882. 215-224-3882. Before your roof becomes unruly, call Dooley.
Overworked? Suffering with an underperforming company, headache customer, staff, or vendors? Or are you a startup who wants to get it right the first time and avoid the costly mistakes? We turned a $24,000 a year odd job handyman service into a seven-figure high-end custom home builder and commercial contractor licensed and operating in three states. This is just one transformation created for entrepreneurs like you in various industries around the country. Not what you're used to from accounting and business consulting? Well, welcome to New Business Solutions. If you're ready to go beyond advising, coaching, and training and get implemented results, call 301-244-9072. Let New Business Solutions apply the best comprehensive administrative, accounting, operations, human resources, management, sales, and marketing to help you actualize your vision for yourself and your company. From anywhere nationally, call 301-244-9072, spelled new as in numerous, on your device right now. Book your free consultation at newbusinesssolutions.com.
From antiquity to the present, our people need to develop a new paradigm. It's time for an awakening with your hosts, Brother Elliot, Sundays 7 p.m., Fridays at 8 p.m. For podcasting or live program scheduling, hit us up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com.
In 1492, you came up on these shores, 700 years educated by the Moors. 17th century, genocide and the gun. Little passage blessed to market the Africans in the so-called land of God. My kind were treated hard. From back then until now, I see and you agree, we have been a misrepresented people. From back then until now, just see my family tree, we have been a misrepresented people. We have been a misrepresented people. Freedom in my hand, we invent ideas
Welcome back to Time for an Awakening. It's 8:33 in the city of Philadelphia. We're in conversation tonight with pharmacologist, global clinical research biotechnologist, Professor Lewis Jefferson. This is part two of our discussion on COVID-19, the vaccine in Black America. Again, you can be involved in the conversation by dialing 215-490-9832. Professor Jefferson, you still with us?
Yes, I'm still with you. That was an incredible music segment. And the sponsors of your show are great. It's great to see that the cooperative economics going on. So it's great.
Thank you, sir. Let's go to 404 for question or comment for our guest. 404? 404, are you there? Let's put them back on hold. Maybe they stepped away. Let's go to 919. That's Wendell, North Carolina. 919. North Carolina, are you there? Let's put them back on hold. Let's go to 267. 267?
You hear me?
Yes, sir.
Ellie, you hear me?
Yes,
Ellie?
Sir.
Okay, hold on one second. 267, hold on one second. 404, yes, are you there?
Yes, sir, I'm here. You hear me?
Yes.
Okay, hey, look here, my brother. Okay, let me get to the point right here. First of all, that conspiracy word y'all throw out, I don't know how the hell y'all got here, but my mom and daddy conspired for me to be here. That's the number one good conspiracy.
Right, right.
My man, my doctor, I don't know how old you are, but I'm 63, sir. And you just kind of belittled that polio vaccine. Okay, this continues from last week. When I was 5 years old, my granddaddy had me and my cousin take that damn polio sugar cube. You remember? I don't know how old you are. Okay, now fast forward 42 years, me and my cousin end up with renal carcinoma. You know what that is, right?
Renal cancer, yep.
Yes, sir. Kidney cancer for the people that not know doctors.
Yeah, yeah.
And then you know what was in that vaccine, right? Simian virus 40. SV40. Look it up, doctor. Okay? And what they did to the family, they took rhesus monkeys, gave them cancer, and then took their kidneys and ground it up with the cancer and put it in the polio vaccine, family. Look it up, doctor, please. I don't know how old you are.
Okay. Say that again.
SV40. S like
No. Your kidneys ground up. Can you say that?
Yes, sir. They used a rhesus monkey, simian virus 40. They gave them
that part, but you mentioned ground up kidney. Can you explain that?
Well, they gave the monkeys cancer. Put it this way, and then they took the cancer from the monkeys and put it in the vaccine, like you said about that other vaccine. And then, therefore, 42 years down the road, me and my cousin end up with kidney cancer. Okay, that's a proven fact. That's a receipt, man. I got a receipt, man. I'm surprised I'm still alive to tell the people. All right? And then, just look it up, Doc, please. I don't know how old y'all. Okay? But I looked up another drug called Ivermectin. You ever heard of that drug, Ivermectin?
Well, let's stay with polio. I mean, I'm not going to dispel anything. I do want to say that when you mentioned kidney cells, that's why I was interested, because in the development of vaccines, sometimes when they're developing, they want to develop a certain protein from some sort of genetic material. So now you can sequence a protein. I can sequence your eyes based on the DNA that I see out of your eye cells. I can look at the DNA and say, okay, well, this nucleotide sequence made his eye cells look like that. I could do that by taking every nucleotide that made your eye cells, put it in order, and then put that into a cell to make those proteins. I could do that. And so when you say that, it's possible that it was kidney cells to make the vaccine for polio, because they utilize what they call human embryonic kidney cells. That's HK HK 23, I believe it is. So, HK 293.
Hey, sir.
HK 293. Yeah. That's yes. Right. Thank you so much. And so. So that does occur, but the synthesis of the DNA that does it should only be the sequence of the iCell or what they wanted to make. And I say should be. So I'm not dispelling what you say, sir and brother.
Okay.
I'm not going, conspiracies, of course. There are a lot of things that have happened to us here in this country are considered conspiracy theories, but they're actually realities. I'm not putting anything down about conspiracies. I'm just saying the science that I'm bringing today is based on hardcore facts that I know.
Hey, Doc, before you go into further, let me explain to the family what HEK293 is. That's aborted fetuses to Elliot and them. HEK293, you look on the label of the food, and if you see that, they're trying to turn you into a cannibal. But, Doctor, I found another drug that was good. It's called ivermectin, okay? And it's cheap as hell. They give it to dogs and cats for heartworms, man, and farm animals. So,
what do you take it for?
Sir?
What do you take it for?
I ain't taking it for nothing now because I'm good.
What are you advocating? Like, what are you saying?
It's real
does?
Cheap, man. It's cheap instead of taking these shots. Okay, let me tell you about another shot.
What are you talking about?
No, you can't take it. Come on.
Take that.
All right.
Okay, why you disputing that? Let me ask you about something else, all right?
There's no proof of it.
Okay, let me ask you another question.
One more, and then we're going to move forward.
One more question. I got one more question. You explained the first three drugs, but I'm in Morehouse patient, and Morehouse is distributing a drug called Nolovax. You familiar with that? Nolovax.
Go ahead. Make your point.
That's a Johnson & Johnson product? I mean, is it under a trial?
Well, they already...
I'm familiar with Novavax. Yeah, I'm familiar with Novavax. I don't like the vector for Novavax either.
Okay, because Johnson & Johnson, they caught up with that powder, that talcum powder, where these women got cancer, man. But anyway, y'all.
Yeah, you've definitely been following it.
Yes, sir, bro. I got receipts, man. I'm going to track that dummy for the polio.
This animal stuff you're talking about, I can't.
Yeah. I'm going to crash that dummy for the polio vaccine. So y'all got a choice, man. Y'all take it and see what happens, y'all, 30, 40 years down the line. But far as me. And number one, the white folks got it. Y'all niggas that swirling, y'all going to get it, man. Anybody swirling, y'all going to get it.
So thanks for your call, bro. All right. Talk to you. Let's go to 267. 267?
Yes, sir. Brother Elliot and Brother Richard, you have Dr. Jeffries, you have a very learned scholar there, so you just can't tell him anything. Listen, Dr. Jeffries.
Jefferson.
I was linking you to Dr. Jefferson.
Mm-hmm.
I was at Lincoln University from 79 to the mid-80s, right? And Pfizer would come on our campus. Pfizer would come on our campus, and they would be promoting pharmaceutical salesmen. And a lot of people jumped on it. You know, coming out of undergrad, 23 and 24 years old, they got a company car, things of that nature. My friends stayed about 15 to 20 years, and they left. They said half of the stuff that they were selling, they didn't know nothing about. See, you could tell them more of what they didn't know of what they were doing. Now, I'm going to also say this. Yeah, I had talked to Elliot a couple hours before you got on. I have a friend of mine, nice young lady. She just got on her feet, and she's going to get an apartment. And she said to me, Tim, she said, I'm not taking that vaccine. I said, most people I talk to are not neither. She said, because what's in that vaccine? I don't have any children. She said, it might make me sterile. I said, whoa. I said, now, right? And then, you know what she said? She said, it's people like you, sir, and Dr. Sabi. She told me a lot about Dr. Sabi's. They don't want people like you to get it out, and they don't want them to be around. So people like you, they don't want you around, and they don't want to hear what you have to say. It's the truth. So I'm going to say this also about the flu. I have never gotten a flu shot. And I had the flu one time and kicked it. I had a cousin. She used to get a flu shot every year. She kept on getting the flu. She stopped. So I'm going to ask you one more thing. That's right. I'm going to ask you one more thing. Do you think we'll be out of this by next year this time?
No, I don't think so. I think maybe by next year this time will be 2022, maybe summer of 2022.
That's deep. Don't stop coming back. Don't stop coming back, Professor.
Yeah, it'd be my pleasure, brother. And thank you so much for your comments.
Right.
Thanks for your call.
Let's
go to 215 again. 215-768. Are you there? Let's put them on hold. Let's go to 267-292. 267-292. Are you there? Let's go to 215. 215.
Hey, Brother Elliot, how you doing?
How are you, sir?
I'm doing for hey, Brother Richard. And how you doing, Professor Jefferson?
Very nice to talk to you. Doing fine.
Praise be to Allah. Yeah, Professor Jeff, I'm enjoying your comments and your information that you bring forth to the audience tonight because, when I look at how this COVID-19, how it's playing out around the country and especially, and around the world, you always got to question your opinions. And white folks, when they act, all of a sudden they want to act like they're so concerned about, black people's health and everything like that because anything they come out with, I'm always going to be leery of it. You know what I mean? And the thing, Professor Justin, for me, as a 59-year-old black man, what puzzles me is just to see so many about black medical people, and Lord knows I treasure our black medical professionals, to see how some of them so, almost like gullible, just ready to accept everything that these Europeans say at face value. Like, oh, we got to get it. You know, it makes sense. If you know the history of what these people have done, I mean, we can go from Henrietta Lacks, Tuskegee, and other things. Why would you be so, readily want to push that on our people, Professor Jeff? I don't understand our black professionals and stuff, how you can be so willing just to take what these people say at face value, what they saying is okay. I just don't, don't know. I guess it just puzzles me, man, how they just so willing to, and you would think they should know better.
Yes, brother.
So, I mean, I don't know.
They're part of the propaganda wheel and the system. I call a lot of them the misleadership class. Sometimes I'll watch
that. Yeah, I like that word. That word sounds familiar.
Right.
It sounds familiar, Professor Jefferson. Yes.
Yeah.
Because a lot of people, Professor Jefferson, I watch a lot of these news and on TV, internet, and I just every time they got some black doctor, whether it's male or female, from what some part of the country, and they're on there pushing the vaccine we've been treated as first class citizens all the time we've been in this country. Like, hey,
right.
So,
they got us last in line for everything, but we in first in line for this one. They putting us first.
Exactly. And the thing is, and I close with this, Professor Jefferson. It's like one of our callers, Brother X from Chicago, said last week when he called, when he was talking to Dr. Lane and Brother Ellen. It's amazing how, these Europeans, they're so concerned about our health and stuff with the COVID-19. Now, something that they could put a stop to, or at least at the very least, make some stiff penalties when these white policemen kill our people unjustly. They can enact laws to hold these cops accountable. They're unwilling to do that, but they're so willing to give us the vaccine. As Sunil Hall would say, Dr. Professor Jefferson, them things that make you go,
Right, absolutely, brother.
So I just close with that. Thanks. Good talking to you, Professor Jefferson. Keep up the good work, man. I'll sit back and listen to the rest of the show. Professor Jefferson and Brother Ellen and Brother Richard, give good guests, good information. Y'all keep doing what y'all doing. And, put me on mute, Brother Ellen, if you don't mind. I'll listen to the rest of the show.
All right. Thanks for your call. Let's go to 646 in New York City. 646.
Good afternoon to Brother Elliot Richard and to your guests. Really enjoying the presentation that you're putting forward. A couple of questions. Number one, based on your history of doing research with vaccinations and things of that nature, aren't these vaccinations supposed to be developed over years instead of a 12-month period that these vaccinations have been put forward? That's my first question.
Yes, that's a very good question. I actually, you know, talked about that some time ago, and I'll give you a comparison. The preclinical stage for classical vaccines are 18 to 30 months. The preclinical stage for COVID-19 vaccine, for these three vaccines, were 0 months. The for phase one trials, that's where you get healthy volunteers on and you make sure that the dose is good and or that doesn't kill anybody isn't the problem. You normally take 30 months. For this vaccine, they took 6 months. For phase two trial, that's when you get people that actually had a disease, you want them to see if it works. They take 32 months. They took 6 months. And for phase three trials, that's the most pivotal trial where you get safety information, meaning whether people have serious side effects from it or not. A phase three trial normally takes 30 months. For these trials, it took 0 months. 0 months for approval of manufacturing. It takes 12 to 24 months. For this, it took 6. It's unbelievable.
So basically, what you're saying is that this is nothing more than a gamble with the lives of the American people so that certain individuals can make money off of this vaccination. Would you say that?
I would say that. I mean, I don't know that I'm going based on science myself, but that seems like very likely that they're pushing it very fast because Moderna put a lot of money into it, and they put a lot of money into it along with the government, and between the government, the media, and pharmaceutical companies, they're pushing it fast so they can say, okay, let's make this big buck fast. And then when the other vaccines come out, they can make money too. But they were banking on this. And the other thing, they want to do it fast, and then they also want to have an example as to the fact that they know that they're developing weaponized viruses. And if someone else, one of our enemies, hits us with a weaponized virus, they want to know if they can do it with a quick response. And they need guinea pigs to do it. And they're using the American population for that. That is what I think could be happening.
I could basically agree with you. Now, also, with Moderna, is it not true that Dr. Fauci is the founder of Moderna?
I'm not sure.
He's either the founder of Moderna or maybe Merck, I think it is. I know it starts with an M. I'm just not sure. But let me get to this next point. You know, we have a segment of our population that are internet radio hosts, internet theorists, internet all things internet, YouTube, all of this, that want to fight and get upset with people like yourself, brother, who come in and question the implementation in our community of a vaccine based on the history that we have shared in regards to Tuskegee and all other things, and try to use the auspice of the polio vaccination, the flu vaccination, and all other type vaccinations that took a period of over, from my understanding, 10 years to get to the point to where it is acceptable to the public. But these numbnuts, as I call them, are trying to get our people to take a vaccination based on something that was delivered in close to 6 to 9 months. There's something very seriously fundamentally wrong with individuals like that who push forward that type of propaganda to harm our people. And I think men like myself, who I like to thank you, and I like to thank Elliot and others who allow men like yourself to be on the air to come forward and push back against this kind of crime against our community. Because I'll say this, and I'll get off the air after this. Talk to me in a year's time after this vaccination has been given to millions of people, and let's see what the outcome is. Because I've heard some people have already getting sick from the vaccination, and they're not pushing that. I just hope that LeBron James don't get behind it like these other fools.
Thank you.
Thanks for your call.
Hey, can I interject another, just based off of this, the exchange about the possible prediction rate? Again, I'm using NARPA's, I guess it's their website, and this is back in June of 2016. DARPA's new Parthesis program is setting out to develop that predictive capability. Parthesis seeks to discover a minimal set of molecular biomarkers that would indicate less than 24 hours after exposure to a pathogen, whether an individual will become too contagious, that that window is narrowed enough to allow early treatment or the initiation of other mitigating steps before a person begins to infect others. And when you mentioned, you know, alluded to the possibility of the military application or weaponization, whether it be offensive or defensive, it seems that, you know, and again, this is 2016, that this here creating the speed needed is not something just by happenstance because of this pandemic in this moment. This is something being considered. And again, it goes back to out of the experience of what went on in the Middle East under Desert Storm, I guess, with the MARS type of virus. And if I'm correct, MARS is the Middle East respiratory virus is like a coronavirus.
It is. MERS too. Yeah. It is another coronavirus. Yes.
Yeah. So I'm just, you know, again, from the information perspective, raising that.
Yes. Yeah. That was what you just read should be repeated over and over again in the context of the answer that I made. It's almost as if you have the documentation that confirms what I was thinking. I've never read that, but what you just read was extremely important.
And again, it comes out of the Defense Advanced Research Project Agency. So they don't particularly have to, as they say, you know, you want to keep, and this is an American thing too, but you want to hide something from black folks, put it in a book.
Exactly.
But it's with us, it's also raising the right question, not necessarily having the answer, but raising the right question to be in search of the answer.
Yeah, no journalist in this country has been as astute as you two based on the questions that you've asked that are very critical to our people. And I'm humbled and very honored to be a part of some history that you two are making.
Well, if you got a few more minutes to stay with us, Professor Jefferson, I'd appreciate it. Let me see.
Yeah, you know, I will have to get off soon. It is my solar return, and my family, they have some stuff for me I want to open and share with them.
Okay. Well, let me just ask one or two more questions, and then I'm going to let you go. And then, well, listen, I'll be in touch with you again because I want you to kind of give us – this is going to be around with us for a while, and the way things are, they're going to get worse before they get any better. So we're going to need you to come back and to talk about these things, but we'll kind of map that out. But before you leave us, you mentioned earlier about us living in the Northern Hemisphere don't get enough vitamin D just from the sun. And us as melanated people, being that we were blessed with protections from the harmful rays of the sun, it also blocks some of the vitamin D necessary.
Yes.
So we need supplements. Am I right? Did I get that right?
That is absolutely correct.
Now, beside maybe supplements that we can get over the counter, and I think you talked about the type we should get, or the doses that we should take, or did you mention that?
I mentioned the doses that we should take. Yeah, I mentioned 2,000. They come in 2,000 IU, okay. And I recommend 4,000 IU. So that would be two per day. They come in like that form, and those units, IU or international units.
Now, is it other ways that we can absorb vitamin D, maybe through different foods?
We can, yes. So I'm primarily a vegan, but I do eat fish 2 days a week. Because I like the fish oils, and you get vitamin D from fish. So I eat fish sometimes, but so mushrooms also have a great source of vitamin D, and then of course
all types.
Red, yeah.
Okay.
Of all types, and then you can not all types. I'll come on another segment and tell you the types of mushrooms.
Okay.
Some mushrooms have more than others. Some mushrooms aren't enough, and I'll look that up and give you more than ones that do. I knew shiitake mushrooms, shiitake. I'm sorry, mushrooms are good. Portobello are good, but other ones I don't know. So I have to give you more information.
Okay.
That. Of course, believe it. There are some red meat that gives you vitamin D, but I don't eat red meat. But if you do, you can get some from it. I don't recommend that for other reasons, but I think, fish, mushrooms, those are a great source. Eggs are a good source of vitamin D.
Okay. All right.
But let me say this, and even also milk product, of course, but all of these would not be adequate enough for the amount of vitamin D3 that we would need to prevent this sort of illness.
Okay.
That most of us are deficient in vitamin D, especially if we don't get outside in the sunlight for at least 40 minutes with our arms exposed and our legs exposed to the sunlight, at least 40 minutes per day, you can activate the vitamin D in your skin. If it's too cold outside, no sun, then you can't get enough. The best way is for the sun. And then I'm the type that really doesn't advocate for a lot of supplementation. I prefer to get everything from my food. But in this case, I think there are people that need more supplementation. I go outside a lot. I live in a sunny place, so I don't need a lot of supplementation, but I still take it because it's that important.
Okay. Professor Jefferson, I want to thank you for being with us. I'll be in touch because I want to kind of schedule you to kind of give us updates and be on in a semi-regular basis. But we'll talk. We appreciate the information, and we need it.
And I have to say that you by taking us, me, to school this evening, I am also very appreciated. And, because, sometimes you think you know something and then you don't. But this gave us the opportunity to really deal with a lot of different areas of how to look at this virus. And I think it's important. Look at these vaccines. I think it's very important. And to be able to realize that we can communicate about that, and we don't necessarily have to be professional. We just have to use our critical thinking skills and our information resource skills to be able to sort out what is best for us as it relates to our health.
Yes, you two are outstanding journalists. I appreciate the opportunity.
We'll talk soon. Thank you, sir.
Thank you. Okay, bye-bye.
All right. We're going to take a brief break, and when we come back, we'll start to wind things down. In the time we have left, maybe you can jump on with a question or comment or just or make a comment by dialing 215-490-9832. We'll be right back.
are listening to Time for an Awakening. Time for an Awakening. With host Brother Elliot and Brother Richard on Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasting or live program scheduling, hit them up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com.
All Insurance Incorporated, an African-American owned and operated insurance agency and business for over 20 years, located at 231 Southeastern Road in Glenside, PA, with other offices in Germantown and West Philadelphia. Call now for commercial insurance quotes, homeowners insurance quotes, automobile insurance quotes, notary and tax services, representing over 15 major A-rated insurance companies, offering a discount on all notary services when you call in for a free quote. Call this number, 215-885-2444. That number is 215-885-2444. 215-885-2444. All Insurance Incorporated.
RG Electrical Inspections provides electrical inspections for realtors, licensed electricians, and homeowners. Licensed and insured underwriter, serving Philadelphia and surrounding area. Call today, 484-268-9837.
Escape the digital plantation. Abibitumi.com, Abibitumi.tv, Abibitumi.tv.com, Abibitumi.store are here for you. You are ready to be free of non-African social media. Don't run from danger, run to safety. Abibitumi.com is here for you. You are ready to be free of digital plantations to control your own products. Abibitumi.store is here for you. Abibitumi, Black Power, Abibitumi. The only word you need to know to join your global Kometsu Black family, to join your interconnected Kometsu Black communities. Escape the digital plantation now. Abibitumi.com, Abibitumi.tv, Abibitumi.tv.com, Abibitumi.store. We are here for you. Escape the digital plantation.
Know that this problem needs to be solved, and we can't keep relegating it to generation after generation because a few of us got a little money, a few of us got positions, a few of us have wealth, while the masses of our people are going steadily down. No one man can rise above the condition of his people. The brother said responsibility. Is it that we should let them take responsibility to do for us, or should we pool the knowledge that's at the table, the power that's in our community, the wealth that's in our community to change the harsh reality of Black life in America? We have to do the job of fulfilling the Black agenda. Thank you.
We have a message to the Black man, because the Black man today is a man who has been made now almost into a laughing stock. Nobody takes the Black man serious. We are just used to be somebody's tool. We are the sportsmen, we're the singers and the dancers, and we're also labeled as the pimps and the criminals and the drug dealers and the killers and the vagabonds of society. We're the bogeymen of British society and other Western systems. And we want to dispel that lie and destroy those myths and put the black man back on the map where we belong. Who is the black man? The black man is the original man. If it wasn't for the black man, no other men could be on this planet. We are the fathers of humanity. We gave birth to all of you.
We are the watchmen on the wall. You are too. You watch with a political eye. We watch from a spiritual eye. But we're supposed to be the watchmen for the people that vote for us. The sad thing is the people vote. They don't give you the money to run your campaigns. So here come big business.
How are you? How are you, Judge? How are you, Alderman? How are you, Congressman? How are you? How are you, Reverend? Well, what can I do for you today, Reverend?
You can't do nothing for me. See, that's what we got to be careful of. We got to be careful of who we bow down to. But see, when you get in your congregation and you talk this Jesus, this powerful Jesus that's sitting at the right hand of the Father with all power in his hand, then you go with your hat in your hand to the governor, to the mayor, to the president, begging for some crumbs. You have sold your God cheap. And you make the white man downtown disrespect all of us.
Time for an Awakening is a proud part of the Black Talk Radio Network, the number one independent black digital and podcasting platform.
Welcome back to Time for an Awakening. And I want to thank our guests that joined us this evening in conversation to part two of the discussion, COVID-19, the vaccine in Black America, a pharmacologist and global clinical research biotechnologist Professor Lewis Jordan was with us. If you missed any of the interview that we had with him, it'll be up on podcast on Time for an Awakening Media, and you can catch it. In fact, listen to both of them if you didn't hear the first part of the series with Dr. Aleem Muhammad and the second part with Professor Lewis Jefferson. Richard,
yes,
excellent
yes.
information from our guest this evening.
Oh, yes, yes.
I'm looking forward to ongoing contributions from both him and Dr. Aleem. Because just like he stated, he gave a guess that this will be around with us for a while. Yeah. And who knows what is going to happen from the people that have taken these shots and what's going to translate, what type of things will be coming down the pike in reference to them receiving this vaccine. We can start practicing some things that's going to help our people move forward. Some of the things that he suggested about the taking of vitamin D, the cutting out of high fructose corn syrup because it's a blocker. Some of these things are good for our people to understand. Some folks already knew this, but it's good to hear this information so we can have some balance into the propaganda that we're hearing.
It's definitely so important for us to be able to, get a perspective. Because, Elliot, one thing that is lurking behind this, and, I've been pushing about our, as a people, our public health in general, right? And the point, because I hope people understand that this is just not about health. It's about our politics and about our economics. It's about our future generation. And if we don't take charge agency of this, we don't even know what's going to be the repercussions of those who are taking the vaccine just from the vaccine, you know, in future generations. And we're looking at this now. So we have to have some kind of, at least some understanding to pass on. Other than that, we're kind of leading our children and our future to slaughter or to a change, a real change. I mean, it was that thing about, and I can never say their name, AstraZeneca.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's, you know.
And you know, Richard, listen. Now that's written down in their assessments because he read it. Now you hear some of the black misleadership class, and I'll use that term again, encouraging our people to take this. They've read the science. You've heard it. You heard that expression go around, reading the science. They read the science. Well, he's involved in the science. Now, he wasn't involved in formulating this vaccine, but he's familiar with reading the science and some of these papers. He stated that the trials that they did in both UK and Brazil is documented.
Mm-hmm.
That they gave full doses of this synthetic vaccine to populations in Brazil. And for folks that don't know, Brazil has the largest diaspora population outside the continent, larger than the United States. So all the black folks in the United States don't make up the population of Africans dispersed in Brazil. And they were given full doses,
mm-hmm.
according to Professor Jefferson. And the UK, which is white, were given half doses. He said, you can't make any mistake like that.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, he said, it's not a mistake.
Right.
So we're... I'm sorry. So where was this information told to our people? Some of our people might start thinking about Tuskegee again, so maybe this information wouldn't disperse to them. But if these misleadership class supposedly read the science, in fact, I heard Kamala Harris less than a week ago said that she familiar with the science and the people need to take it.
Mm-hmm.
If that's the case, then why aren't these things told to our people? Why do you have the misleadership class instructing black ministers, other blacks in some type of leadership to encourage the black populace to take this vaccine?
And that it's what I'm trying to say, because the other thing that struck me that he said was, you know, because they were pushing that not just taking the science, that they're using the scientific methodology in relationship to trials. And they did the trial, the stage three trial. Well, correct me if I'm wrong, if I heard it wrong. He's saying we basically still in the stage three trial
because
mm-hmm. it hasn't been licensed yet. So in America, they're not, you know, we're talking about Brazil and dosage and a company, but right here, they're really in a trial, in a trial process and making it come off like they're in actually a remedial remedy process.
Yeah, it's a trial process. The population is being inoculated. That's a trial process because it hasn't really, according to Professor Jefferson, it hasn't went through the proper stages.
And the data hasn't been peer reviewed as it relates to all who is getting the shots.
Wow. Richard, there's a couple calls. Let's jump on here. Let's see if let's exhaust them and see what's going on here. Let's go to 469 in Texas. Caller, what's your name? Where are you calling from?
Kevin Prince. I'm calling from Tulsa, Oklahoma.
How are you, sir?
Yeah, how you all doing today?
Good, good.
you all have just a great program. I really enjoy it. One of the things that we did last night as a family, we had a conference call, and we have a great niece who just gotten her PhD in pharmacy last year.
Okay.
So that was one of the things that we posed to her as to whether or not, what was her stance on it. And she basically stated that she wouldn't be taking it. She said that the Moderna is probably better, but most times it takes about 5 years for a trial before you find out, you know, all the side effects and the effectiveness of it. So we're not going to be, we're definitely, well, I wasn't going to do it anyway, because I feel like if you build up your immune system, most of those things you can withstand. That's the first point. The second point is there are some things that can be done that I feel needs to be exhausted before you start talking about inoculating people. And one of the things is that because we're in a capitalist society and money rules, that is first and foremost of the most important to people. Making money, not putting things into place, mandatory mask and, you know, and some of those things. And then third, and this speaks to the Miss Leadership class, they need to be out here really putting the risk, given having placing the resources within the African community so that we can come up with our own doctors, physicians, scientists, so it will be an alternative. And actually, by creating more competition, in the long run, you get a wider variety of things that will make sure that the product that you're getting out is the best product that you could possibly get, if that makes sense.
Oh, definitely.
Well, certainly. Certainly it does. Go ahead. Finish your thought. Go ahead.
So first and foremost, what we're seeing right now is, and I come back to that Miss Leadership class, they're pushing us like cattle towards people who traditionally, and I mean, this is not conspiracy or propaganda. This is factual.
Yes.
That the Black community has been sacrificed and used as cattle to test products that have not been deemed to be safe, or it's too experimental. So we need to really, really be pushing. And let me just say one last thing, because I would like to also encourage people, the Black community, the African community, to do what we've done. One of the things about this COVID thing, it has opened up to Zoom so that we can have dialogue with one another and take advantage of the resources within our own families to give us guidance as to what direction that we should be going. So again, I thank you all for allowing me to express my thoughts, and I appreciate the fine works that you all continue to do.
Hey, brother, thank you for your contribution, and don't be a stranger. Call again.
Oh, I won't. I listen to you all the time.
Okay.
And I certainly appreciate all the information that you all have out. So I definitely will call you, and I'm going to send you a contribution as well.
Thanks. That's always appreciated. But your contribution is what you just did.
Okay. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Let's try this call here. Caller, what's your name? Where are you calling from? Caller? Let's put them back on hold. Richard, and I agree with him that we need some discussion on these things. Let's grab this call. 215, caller, what's your name? Where are you calling from?
This is Carlton.
Yes. Can you hear me? Yes.
Hey, how you doing? This is Carlton. How you doing?
How are you, sir?
You call me Pete.
Oh, yes, sir.
And I just wanted to make a comment.
Mm-hmm.
And that is that in the age of the reality television, where people are presented as buffoons and fools and modern-day minstrels, it was refreshing to hear somebody like Dr. Jefferson talk, a man that's well-credentialed, a man that's well-versed and very knowledgeable. So it was refreshing to hear somebody talk about his profession in an authoritarian way, an authoritative way. And for a young black man, he said he'd only been in the field for 25 years, and in the field of medicine, it's relatively young, and I was really proud to hear a person talking like that. So I just wanted to put that out there.
Well, in the situation that we find ourselves in, we need all the information that we can get. But listen, our people are at a crossroads. Not only is this pandemic affecting everybody, but it's clear that our people have been hit hard by this because of these pre-existing conditions. So if anybody needs the right information, it's us.
I totally agree. I totally agree. And I think for some people, some unscrupulous people, it's an opportunity. If you look at our history, in this country, in 1970, 83% of the population were Caucasians, whites of European descent. By 1980, it dropped to 80%. By 1990, it dropped to 75%. By the year 2000, it dropped to 63%. That's a huge drop in population. Now, the replacement rate for Caucasian women has fallen below, the death rate is higher than the replacement rate. And it was a big concern. People like Congressman Stephen King made a statement. He said that we can't restore our civilization with somebody else's baby. It was a big issue. So what I'm saying is, to some, this is an opportunity, and we must be wise. We must be wary of. We look at some of the atrocities that have been done over the centuries. You can't put certain things beyond people's mentality. So we must be very smart in dealing with this. A friend of mine, when I came out of college, a friend of mine, he went to Drexel University. Brilliant young black man. And we called him the Cosby family back then. Because his mother was a doctor, his father was a lawyer, you know, just almost the same thing. And he was a engineer, graduated from Drexel University, top university. And he fell in love with a young Cambodian girl. And he wanted to marry her. Her father was coming for the graduation. And she told him, it is the custom of my people for the man wanting our hand in marriage to ask our father. And it was a perfect opportunity. So he told me the story. And he said, when the man came, he had never left Cambodia. He could barely speak a word of English. He came to this country. And he said, this was the opportunity. So he and his parents took them out after graduation, took them, the Cambodian man and his wife out to dinner. And that was the opportunity. He asked for his daughter's hand in marriage. And his response was shocking. He said, I don't really want no Negro in family. Now, this man could barely speak a word of English, okay? But we had exported racism around the world. So what I'm saying is, you cannot underestimate. I don't want to sound like a conspiracy theorist, but you can't underestimate people's behavior or people's belief system. Does that make any sense to you?
Certainly. Certainly it does. Without question.
So I want black people to be wise in how they deal with it. I want people to be understanding, to get as much information as possible before you make any drastic decision. That's the best advice I can give them.
Sound advice to me.
Brother, thank you for your contribution.
Thank you so much.
Talk to you. Peace. Richard, boy, wow. You know, before we leave, Richard, and when I took the call, I was mentioning with the other caller in Texas had mentioned about the need for our people to have an open discussion on these matters. It's a lot of things that are affecting our people that we really need to have open discussion on among black folks. So all of our people can see exactly where these people lie. And when I say lie, I'm talking about the position that you're taking. Because, you know, you talk about it a lot. During the 19th century, it was plenty of discussions at the Negro conventions about the direction that our people should be taking. You talk about it a lot. It was discussion on a lot of different matters, whether it was politically, whether it was the freedom here for our people and men trying to develop means to help their enslaved brethren, the ones that weren't enslaved. It was discussions about leaving here. If the opportunity arose where we could leave here as one, it was a lot of different discussions on a lot of different things. But the thing is, we had those discussions, Richard.
Mm-hmm.
And the last time we had a discussion of that magnitude, and you mentioned this also, was that the 72 convention in Gary.
Yep.
And the televised one was that one, and I think that was that after Gary or during the same time? The one
I think, 73.
The one that Tony Brown did.
Right.
When he had people on both sides of the aisle, so to speak. And I'm not talking about no Democrat and Republican when I say both sides of the aisle. I'm talking about integrationists and nationalists. We're talking about these things, putting their positions before the people so the people could be the judge. That was the last time something like that was done. Europeans made sure that those discussions wouldn't happen anymore among people that they deemed adequate for leadership. Among our people. You heard Clinton say it at John Lewis's funeral. He mentioned it.
Yeah. Almost like a Gil Scott, we almost lost Detroit.
Yeah, I mean, he mentioned it out of his own mouth. That it was a concerted effort among Europeans in leadership to stop that direction that black people seem to be going in. These discussions have to be had. You know, Dr. Francis Quest Welsing, may she rest in power, Neely Fuller had the position about not criticizing our people. Right, Richard?
Yep.
But, you know, I don't agree with that. You have to question some of our people's motives, because at this stage, it's dangerous for us not to question it. We had a perfect example tonight. You have black leadership on almost every level that's out here encouraging black folks to take a vaccine. That's some of the medical experts. We had a medical expert on here last week, and we had a biotechnology expert on here this week that have dealt with vaccines and the making of vaccines. He talked about some of those in the beginning of the broadcast. Not the COVID, but the making of other treatments.
Mm-hmm.
And talked about how these are dangerous for our people to take. And when I say our people, to be honest, I don't care what other people do. I'm concerned about black folks. And it's dangerous for our people to take those. Now, if you have experts, or both a doctor and a biotechnologist saying that it's dangerous for our people to take that, how do I take the word of a politician saying that it's not dangerous? He's read the science. This man produces the science that they claim they read. The man that we just had on produces the science that they claim they read. We got to have these discussions. If not, then it's, you know, I don't know what direction this is supposed to go in. And I know where it will eventually lead. And, it shouldn't be like this.
Nope.
Richard, let me share this article before we leave. And this is unrelated to our topic tonight, but I just thought it was interesting. It was written by Victor Trammell with Your Black World. And he was talking about this stimulus package that was just passed. Now, you got the Black Caucus and all that went along with the Democratic Party to pass this stimulus, $600. And keep in mind that when this first came out, that they stated that not only was Blacks hit hard because of health concerns dealing with this COVID, but Blacks were hit hard as far as employment, because most of their employment was service jobs and things of that nature, and those were the first to be closed, and they were out of work. Right?
Mm-hmm.
Now, let me read what Victor Trammell shared in reference to that package that was signed. And it all goes back again to the Black misleadership class and the need to stand up for the interests of your people. And I'm not talking about the American people. Those people are represented by black folks in those districts voted for them, not whites. Let me share this. It says, last week, both chambers of the U.S. Congress approved a new coronavirus relief bill, which calls for $900 billion in emergency funding. As of December 26, 2020, the bipartisan emergency stimulus package has not yet been signed into law by the Trump administration. Well, since then, it has been. Though the relief bill has been supported by Democrats and Republicans on Capitol Hill, the legislation in itself has been deemed by many in Washington insiders as highly controversial. For one, the proposed $600 stimulus checks, down from $1,200 checks approved in March, has been deemed too low. Even Donald Trump, the outgoing U.S. president, agrees that $2,000 stimulus checks would be more appropriate. Given the state of the economy and the economic vulnerability of many Americans, the state they're facing right now. The 5,000 pages of legislation in the new bill also calls for funding of some other controversial initiatives, including farm-based programs that have nothing to do with the plight of American people. Two of these provisions call for millions upon millions of dollars in funding to help the nation of Pakistan forge ahead with the new political and social reforms. According to a recent report, the new stimulus bill prescribes $25 million in funding to help Pakistan with pro-democracy reforms and gender programs. The report claims that $15 million in funding goes towards democratization of Pakistan, and $10 million have been prescribed for gender programming. Writing in the bill points out the problem of gender inequality in Pakistan. However, it does not specifically give details on how the so-called gender program will be run. History has shown two things for certain. America does not understand the culture of conservative Islamic countries, and the U.S. involvement in such countries has done more harm than good. As recent as the era of Obama, the Obama administration in America, U.S. action in nuclear-armed Pakistan has been laced with violence. According to January 2017 report published by the Council of Foreign Relations, President Obama authorized nearly 2,600 aerial bombing attacks inside Pakistan from 2009 to 2016. Many Pakistani civilians were killed in airstrikes Obama authorized throughout those two presidency terms. As America learned in Afghanistan and Iraq, a nation cannot force a country to implement democracy by constantly raining down bombs on that country. Before paying huge financial bribes to puppet governments, Pakistan is a highly conservative Muslim country with different ideas about how women should contribute to society. Now, This brother, Victor Trammell, that wrote for Your Black World, gives his opinion on what was in that bill and where a lot of money is going towards democracy, I'll put it that way, democracy in Pakistan and gender programs. I don't know what that means, Richard. I can surmise, if you're talking about the United States, what that means.
Mm-hmm.
So you got black folks in the black caucus that voted for this bill. How does that equate with our people here and the struggles that we're having? You're talking about interfering in another people's government, interfering in their quote-unquote gender program. And believe me, when you talk about gender programming and you talk about Europeans, you're talking about some type of LGBTQ or homosexual involvement. You are.
Mm-hmm.
So what does that have to do with the struggles of our people here if you're representing me? How are you voting for a huge dividends of money going to something like that and your people are struggling? I just thought that I wanted to share that with the listening audience, because these are some of the things you're not going to hear. I don't care what they talk about on white talk stations, Rush Limbaugh and all that. They deal with issues pertinent to their communities, and they talk about you in a lot of times derogatory terms. But we're supposed to have conversations about black issues on black radio that'll move our people forward. And some of these things here that these people in leadership are doing is totally wrong, and they should be called out on the carpet on. But you can't call them out if you don't know what's going on. So, I just wanted to share that in the time we have left. Before we wind up this evening, I just want to, wait a minute. Let me take this last call. Let's go to 215. 215?
Yes, good evening.
Yes.
I didn't get the chance to hear the talker, the person that was on this evening. So please forgive me, because I actually turned the program on a little late. There was a question and just a statement that I wanted to make. First of all, the question, and I'm hoping maybe one of you two brothers can help me. When this pandemic first first hit, and the shutdown, several states and then basically the country started shutting down back in March, I heard a lot of references being made to when this country went through a pandemic 100 years ago. 100 years ago, you still had Jim Crow laws on the book, all type of discriminatory laws that some are actually still on the book. They're maybe not being enforced. But during that time, at least in our communities, African-American communities, we couldn't just walk into a hospital, you know, the nearest hospital, whatever nearest hospital was closest to us. We couldn't just walk in it. A lot of us didn't even have access to doctors in our communities. So my question is this. It's kind of like a two-part question. Do you brothers have any idea on how our people made it through that pandemic 100 years ago? And also, do you have any information that, or maybe like a website or anything that I can actually go to read up on some of that information myself?
That's an interesting and powerful question. I don't have off the top of my head something. I know I might have scanned some articles of that period at that time, but to direct you to, but I think that, you know, you can
deal with, you can just start with the, you know, that Google thing. I don't have it. There is a book, and I'm trying to remember the name, and I don't think I have. I have to look to see if I have that book in my that was dealing with that period. But no, off the top of my head, I don't. Elliot, you may. I don't.
No, I don't know. And what that was? I think that was the Spanish flu, wasn't it, Richard?
Yeah.
Being that our people, if they had access to doctors, it was their own doctors. Some of our people, especially the rural areas, didn't have access to doctors. They had access to traditional medicines that was passed down among our people, and they utilized them. A lot of our people did die from that. In fact, some of the people that was involved in the struggles during that period died from that Spanish flu. I do remember some of the guys, some of the names escape me now, but some of the people that was involved in our struggles back then died from that Spanish flu. We survived. We survived a lot of things here because, our people didn't have, like you said, they couldn't go to doctors and get treated from their doctors. We did have doctors that, did a lot of work among our community, and people that lived in rural areas did the best they could with what they had, a diet and things of that nature. But, as far as the numbers, no, I don't know how you could find out that. Maybe we could bring somebody on to talk about that. Gerald Horn comes to mind, Richard.
Yeah.
That might have information on that. But go ahead.
Yeah, I think that would be interesting because, the way I was thinking, I said, we had to have, now, we've always had maybe one or two people either in our families or in our communities that when a person got sick, to a child or older person or whomever, they can go to this person, like I said, with his grandmother or maybe a neighbor across the street or something like that. They knew little things that was passed down through the generations and everything that was little things they could mix up that was able to heal different ailments that was, could break a fever and things like that. But, when I was thinking about it, I said, it's not that lack of access to decent health care and the right type of medicine is not much really, I don't think is not a whole lot that has changed in our communities in 100 years.
Mm-mm.
Yeah, I could be wrong, but I'm just, looking at how things were then and how things are now. You still have a lack of decent health care, especially in our communities, and that's one of the reasons why a lot of people are in our communities suffering from this present pandemic because they already have pre-existing health conditions, whether it's diabetes, whether it's high cholesterol or different types of heart disease or whatever. And sometimes it might be two or three different things. But I was just asking because I think that would be interesting for the public to know, because maybe it was something that they were doing then that could possibly even help us out now and maybe even help us out in the future.
Yeah,
I'm sorry.
Go ahead.
There's an article that I pulled up that I'll just make reference to, and I don't know the person, but the reason why I wanted to suggest this because they have a lot of references, book references to the period. And the title is "There Wasn't a Lot of Comfort in Those Days, African-American Public Health in the 1918 Influenza Epidemic." And it's written by Vanessa Noddington Gamble, MD, PhD. And she seems to do a long 70-something references that at the end. So that would be a good starting point for both of us in relationship to looking for someone to speak to that, because I haven't really heard. I know when they had the flood in Katrina, there was a lot of discussion about how you know, the flood that happened in New Orleans around the same time period occurred and what happened. But in relationship to this pandemic, I don't think anybody's placed it, as you're asking, in that 100-year historical context. So again, okay. there wasn't a lot of comforts in those days. African-American, mm-hmm. public health, and the 1918 influenza epidemic. And the author is Vanessa Noddington Gamble.
Vanessa Noddington Gamble. Okay. And
How old was that book, Richard?
It was an article. Matter of fact, it was, let me see, it said it was corrected. Now, I don't know, because it says 2010. But it doesn't have a date of when it actually was published.
Okay.
Yeah, and that's actually one of the reasons why I asked that question, was because in the several months since this, you know, present pandemic has taken place, I haven't heard anyone kind of like refer to what were our people doing 100 years ago that helped them make it through, because they had to been, like I said, I'm quite sure they had to have been doing something, because if they weren't, they would have been wiped out.
Mm.
You know, it would have been a lot more. I figure it would have been a lot more deaths in African American in our communities than it was. You know, I don't know what the numbers is and everything. You know, I think it'd be great to plug into some of the more of the information. I'm going to look up the person that you just spoke of in the book you just spoke of, but I think that'd be good information for all of us, you know, really.
Right. Can I just share this paragraph out of here, Elliot?
Sure. Go ahead.
Yeah. African Americans, and this is the second paragraph. Let me see, make sure I'm doing this. A synopsis. When the 1918 influenza epidemic began, African American communities were already beset by many public health, medical, and social problems, including racist theories of Black biology, inferiority, racial barriers in the medicine and public health, and poor health status. To address these problems, African Americans mounted efforts such as establishing separate hospitals and professional organizations, repudiating racist scientific theories, contradicting prevailing theories about African Americans' increased susceptibility to disease. It appears that during the 1918 epidemic, the incidence of influenza was lower in African America, although the epidemic had less devastating impact on African American communities, it still overwhelmed their medical and public health resources. Observations about the lower rates of influenza in African Americans did not derail racist theories about the biological inferiority of Black people or overturn conceptualizations of Black people as disease threats to white people when the epidemic ended. The major problem that African Americans faced was still remaining, this perky flu all over town, and white and Black and rich and poor are all included. That's, you know, that's one thing. And I just seen something that going, and this will be the last point I'll make on it, but it gives a reference to Dr. Du Bois. Between African Americans' health in the early 20th century. Between 1900 and 1920, Black physicians and social scientists sought to understand the factors contributing to the poor health of African Americans. Now, that's similar to today, and I think we need to emphasize that more. They aggressively repudiated theories that attributed the race health status to biological racial inferiority, and adamantly supported those that emphasize social factors. In 1906, Du Bois published The Health and Physique of the Negro American to document the poor health status of African Americans and to analyze the underlying cause. A major objective of the monograph was to refute theories of Black racial inferiority postulated by Frederick F. Hoffman, a statistician at Prudential Life Insurance Company. And, you know, and I'll leave it there because it goes into the eugenics things. But I just thought that that's a snippet of what this, you know, the article and, you know, presents. And again, you know, she has 75 resources, references to give us a ideal of what was the landscape of that period, which I really appreciate the question that you raised.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you know, like I said, I just think that any of that information that we can find on what our people did, you know, during that time and everything, can definitely be helpful.
And you see, they built hospitals. You know, like we ain't building hospitals today.
That's yeah, well, you're right about that. Yeah, but I thank you, brothers, for taking my call, and I appreciate the information.
Thanks for your call.
Take care.
Richard, that was an interesting question. You know, I thought about what's the brother's name up there in Boston that when that smallpox broke out in 1700. Onesimus.
Yes.
He helped. In fact, the white guy that heard what he told him, he ended up, for lack of a better term, marketing it like he invented it.
Mm-hmm.
But we were the first ones that did anything in reference to vaccines in this country. Came from our people.
Right.
So, the listening audience, if they look up Boston smallpox epidemic in early 1700s and what was used to help inoculate Bostonians, and in fact, the whole country at that time, was knowledge that came from our people, because the Europeans didn't know what to do. They was just going to die from, I guess, herd immunity was going to be their solution. Just you get it and you die, and then ones who live, they just live. But we were the first ones that introduced that type of knowledge base to Europeans here, our enslaved ancestors. But before we leave this evening, just want to give out the information on the other programming on Time for an Awakening Media, Mondays, Wednesdays, and Fridays, African Perspectives with Brother Oshi. That's 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. Mondays, Wednesdays, and Fridays. Always interesting guests and conversations on African Perspectives. That's 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. From 6 to 8 later on that evening, Acres of Diamonds with Brother Jihad Ahmed. From 8 to 9 on Time for an Awakening Media, Black Therapy Central, with host Dr. Maria Kambane and Sister Nataki Kambane. From 9 to 10, Conversation Reparations. That's the first and third Monday of every month. And this is a quote-unquote new calendar year. So I think they'll be starting up their live programming again. I got to check with Brother Cambisi in reference to it. On Tuesday, 8 to 10 p.m., Black Reality Think Tank with host Dr. William Rogers. On Friday, Time for an Awakening is on the air from 8 to 10. On Saturday, from 4 to 6 in the afternoon, Black Sister Talk with host LaWanda Chambers. And later on Saturday evening, 7 to 9, the Elders of Sankofa with host Brother Alfonso Watkins. And then Time for an Awakening is back from 7 until on Sundays. I want to thank everybody for listening to the program this evening. If you didn't catch the interview with Professor Lewis Jefferson, it'll be up on the podcast probably sometime this evening. You can check it by tomorrow. Thank everybody for listening to the program this evening. Lively discussion, as always, and we'll be back on Friday, Lord willing, to continue on this path towards an awakening. Peace.
If you're driving through the country on a lazy afternoon, or you're watching your children playing after school, misery. So unaware, I know the things that they'll soon have to take care of. Children, soon it will be their turns to try and save the world. Right now they seem to play such a small part of.
Save the children.